Today is the 22nd of May, 2016. I'm happy to see all my students here. And I say hello to those around the world. By the way, Ellie, here's Rabbi Belsky's talk, the one you're referring to right here. And I was looking for that. I didn't know what I did with it, so thank you. I just want a few comments on current events. On the issue of having Yom Ha'atzmaut on Thursday or Friday that we spoke about, so I see the tshuva of Reb Heschel Schechter in his handwriting, and he says in America where there's no problem with Chilul Shabbos, we don't have to worry, we can have it on Friday. I respectfully disagree with my dear friend. We grew up together. Unity of Klal Yisrael is more important, particularly on this issue where there's no intrinsic Kedusha Kayom to Yom Ha'atzmaut that it has to dafka be Heyiya. But once in Israel we're doing it on Dalariya, it should be that way all over the world. But his tshuva certainly doesn't apply to Efrat, where they're going to hold Dominion Friday, and this is Israel, where Baruch Hashem, we do have a problem with Chilul Shabbos. I say Baruch Hashem, because at least the Jews here, who lo aleinu, don't know what Shabbos is yet, they don't assimilate like in America. In America, it's 90% the lost cause. Here, you can never tell what's going to happen with children and grandchildren, Kanayin Hara. That's number one. Number two, on the Eruv, that controversy has broken out very strongly in Crown Heights, where people are saying, we're not going to move into the community unless there's an Eruv. And you all know the Rebbe was opposed to Eruv. So I'm not here, Alex, to redo my shurim of 2 years' worth. But I'm very happy to see, and all that's being published now as the controversy heats up again, everything we said in class is Chayv HaKayim, and I stand on my conclusion. If you're a Litvak, you can be Machmir if you wish, not to be Samachan and Erev, but you have to know it's a Chumrah. If you're a Pelisha, you can be Mekil much more easier than a Litvak because of the Bet Ephraim. If you're a Hungarian, and you're opposed to an Erev, you're an Apikiris, plain and simple. Some of the language in what's been published now, republished, is very frightening and very strong. But my prediction is, and people are, I don't know if they're quoting me or they reach the same conclusion, you can't have an Orthodox community today without an Erev. People want a day school, a mikveh, a shul, an Erev. You want to be machmir, that's a private matter. But don't fight putting up an Erev. Ultimately, there'll be an Erev in Crown Heights. And this takes us into the Monday class, and I'll be talking about the future of Chabad, if not this year, the start of next year. Finally, I want to say something. I have a great admirer who I thank again and again. Is a man who owes me nothing. He never studied with me. His children never studied with me. He's very highly respected. It's Rabbi Heschel, or Harry Merrillis, of Chicago, and his website, Emet V'Amuna. He's a Talmud of Rabban Soloveitchik. I've met him. I met him once when I was in Chicago the last time. Very inspiring individual, Talmud Chacham Yirei Shemayim, and he's fighting the battle to keep what he calls modern orthodoxy or centrist orthodoxy alive. And he refers to me quite a few times. I don't want to repeat what he says about me. I should live up to what he thinks of me. I'll leave it at that. But last week, he quoted a talk I gave, and I just want to come back to it because I'm suffering when you see the news. About 20 years ago in the Kollel, I was 20 years younger, I had more strength. So on the Monday morning class, I think it was Tuesday morning then, or Wednesday morning, I don't recall. I remember I changed it. It may have been Tuesday morning, and then Rabarin wanted to teach Tuesday morning, so Rabarin Lichtenstein asked me if I could switch to Monday. I said, absolutely. But in what was the Monday morning class, after class, I would answer questions. I had energy, and the students, evidently, there was no class following me, so I'd give an hour and a half lecture and another hour in Yonadiyoma. So the students asked me about mixed seating at weddings. So I gave a whole shiur, I can't repeat it now. And the heart of the shiur, I reached the psak halacha. It depends the way you sit Friday night in your house. If the men are in one room and the women in another, then at a wedding you have to follow the Ramah and have separate seating. But if you sit mixed, You can follow the Reb Mordechai Yaffa, the Levushim today, we use the sitting mix. And I told them, I personally am very offended when I go to a wedding and I can't sit with my wife, because to be honest, my whole life is learning and learning and learning. You don't realize how much learning goes in, even to Disha or other things, planning books, lectures, publicly. So if I have moments to be with my wife at a wedding, I want to be with her. I don't want to be with a bunch of my male friends talking Lashon Hara and gossiping like this. So the Yekkes used to sit husband-wife, wife-husband, husband-wife, wife-husband. And it was perfect. That's that. So a Talmud asked me, Jack Levinstein used to come to the shul, used to sit right there. He came for many, many years. Today, I wish he would come, because it would be good for him to get out and meet some of the outsiders here. It would be wonderful. So Jack said to me, Rebbe, can I put that up on a website? I don't know what he was talking about. I have a website, shmepsite, there was no YU Torah yet. So I told him, do whatever you want. He put it up on a website, and until today, I'm either blessed or maledicted that year. But I want to say something. It's perhaps 20 years after I expressed myself, I have not changed my position one iota. And I want to tell you, it's very disturbing to me. With all the chumras we have today, we don't look at women, we put up mechitzot, we have separate seating, we're not allowed to face a pizza parlor, can't have seats for people to sit on, because you can just buy the pizza and take it out. Chas v'chalila, men and women, or boys and girls, should talk to each other. So, you know my vote. If someone would show me a sheet that works, let's say everyone wearing a shtreimel, their percentage of success with their children is 99%. Rakefet would be the first person to put on a shtreimel. There's nothing more important to me than perpetuating Torah. But I have to tell you, people have shtreimels, and people have this, and people have that, and they also have kids who hate Yiddishkeit with a passion. So none of us have the shita. I live the way I live. For me, it worked very well. Ani moda l'Kadosh Baruch Hu, those who know my personal life and my family, many of my students. Ani moda l'Kadosh Baruch Hu. But I never forced my shita upon anyone else. But now, let's look at all the chumras. Beautiful. Tell me, what did it produce? The sexual scandals we have in the Torah world are beyond conception. I had a Rebbe, Rebbe Yeruchim Gerelik. Rebbe Yeruchim, you all know, there were two Rebbeim in YU that everyone spoke about. One was the Rav, the other one was Rebbe Yeruchim Gerelik. Rebbe Yeruchim was a ball of fire. He could blow hot, he could blow cold. He was unbelievable. He could maledict you one day and kiss you the next day. Those of you who have studied the best volume, I'm told, that has been written since Shakespeare's plays, from Washington to Washington. I have a description in there of Rebbe Yeruchim Gerelik that is second to none with Rav Kutner. That is Rebbe Yeruchim. So,
they say Chaim Potak was...
Chaim Potak ran out of the yeshiva because of two people, the two names that I mentioned, Rebbe Yeruchim and Rav Salo. That's for a different shmuis. But so one time Rebbe Yeruchim said to the class, this was, we were gearing up for Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and he let us have it, you know, he's from Mir, he's from Brisk, and you American bums, when you say Al Chait, you would love to have pictures of the Al Chait. So I want to tell you, I told him, you know, as best as I could tell, I said, Rebbe, I can't even believe these al-chets. How could a Torah Jew, 99% of these al-chets are beyond my comprehension. All right, so he explained to us that we all say the same al-chets, so someone who really has to say it shouldn't be embarrassed. Gentlemen, I cannot believe what's going on. And as you know, last week you think, and it's across the board, during the summer, they arrested a Rosh Yeshiva up north. They tell me he's a first-rate Talmud Chacham, that Dayanim used to consult with him for sources. I cannot tell you what this man did. He's in jail today. I cry that women can believe... I can't pronounce further. Read it. It's in all the newspapers on every last website. Last week, who did they arrest? They revealed the name. There was an order not to reveal. He's been in jail already, and people are saying in jail, er liegt in Lernen, and he's learning day and night. I hate to say, I would execute this guy. The sins that he did, this is a mashgiach in a yeshiva. This is a charedi. He never sat at the center with women. In the yeshiva. Remember what the Joe DiMaggio said about Bill Clinton? In the White House with Levinsky. DiMaggio was not a tzaddik, but this Roman Catholic guy who only had Jewish friends was offended by Clinton's behavior in the White House. What are we supposed to say in the office of the yeshiva, in the mashgiach's office? So I stand on what I said. We have a tremendous challenge today to raise people with a Torah attitude towards sex. And part of it, my humble opinion, is learning to live in a world where they're men, where they're women. If you view every woman as a sexual object, you are anti-Torah 1,000%. I'd hate to think that every male is a male predator. And we have to learn, women also. So one Talmud here told me, well, Rabbi Schechter said, times have changed. Times haven't changed. Women are women, men are men. You described to me the dresses of the women. I can't repeat it. I don't use words like that. In my time, too, there were plenty of Ramaz graduates and Central graduates who dressed like Rabbi Schechter described women today. You have to learn. This is the world. Men, women, we're b'nei Torah, we're guided by God, by Torah, by Halacha, by Devar Hashem. Halavai, we should work out happy marriages, and from the second we marry, never ever look at another woman lustfully, okay? This is the challenge of life. I can tell you, in my generation, from b'nei Akiva, 98% of everyone that I knew from b'nei Akiva achieved this level. Okay? Baruch Hashem. But I haven't changed my viewpoint one iota, just the opposite. I'm still shaking, and the other scandal, I go one by one by one by one, you can't escape it. But this one, wow. Adkan. Gentlemen, back to our dear friend Rav Menashe Klein, who has, in Rabbi Belsky's talk against the Erev in Brooklyn, and Macht from Rav Menashe Klein, Ash Ublata. I don't know how to explain that, Josh. Ashes, blatter, a mess, ash and blatter. It's like walking in to this building after Shabbos with the food strewn all over. They ate in the classrooms, the kugel on the floor, the chulin strewn all over.
That's not blatter. Blatter is dirt. That is a sloshy guy character.
With all due respects, Herbie, you probably are native to Yiddish. I am not. I still stand on my description. Ash ublata. What do you say, Ali? Okay. Okay. So, what do you say?
Mud.
No, but it doesn't convey. Ash ublata, you know, it's a mess. It's just. Okay. Whatever. The point has been made. And even our Persian students understand. Now, today is very fascinating. You see, Rabbi Menashe Klein is suffering, he's struggling. With women, with he's writing to Dov Frimmer, and the women, and the respect we have to have, and everything we learn from them, and everything we learn from Chana, and what's going to be if we start reforming? Once you reform, you start like Shabtai Tzvi, and one change leads to another. And here we come back to what we spoke about months ago. Machlekes HaPoskim, Reb Heschel Schechter, Reb Menashe Klein. If you recall Reb Heschel's tshuva, Reb Heschel came out that women are obligated to daven with a minyan. They have to hear Kriyat HaTorah, they have to hear Kaddish, they have to hear Kedusha, and therefore, how can they make their own prayer group if they're going to miss all this? Reb Menashe Klein said just the opposite. Women are not obligated for any aspects of public prayer, and therefore They don't have to go to shul. They don't have to make their own prayer groups. Exactly the opposite of Reb Heschel Shechter. My dear friends, who was right, who was wrong? Reb Menashe Klein here scores a home run, bottom of the ninth, over the wall. Something I spoke about 20, 30 years ago in the history of Torah in modern times when I dealt with the Vilna Gaon. How many of you are familiar? By the way, I want to make clear, what I'm teaching today or all any day in this class doesn't mean I totally agree. I'm teaching what Reb Menashe and I saw and sat in the class and said, you agree with that? I looked at him and said, this is a postgraduate class. I want you to understand the world of Reb Menashe Klein. But the problem is real. We're suffering here. We're struggling. You all understand what's going on. All you have to do is look at the websites, Women at the Wall, Chovev Torah, Avi Weiss, Yitz Greenberg. Oh, what's gone on these last few weeks? So tell me, who's right? Who's wrong? The Vilna Gaon. Do you recall the story of the Vilna Gaon? The Vilna Gaon started out for Israel, okay? He never reached Israel. He turned back and spent the rest of his life in Vilna. Much has been written why he turned back. Actually, a doctorate was done, I believe, at Bar-Ilan University by Morgenstern, Dr. Morgenstern, with a whole theory of why he turned back, with eschatological overtones. I gave many different reasons why he turned back. I heard from the Rav, but it's not important now. What is important is that he was really leaving to go in Aliyah. This was the end. Natan, he was really saying goodbye. So he left the last will and testament, the Tzavav, the Vilna Gaon. It's been published, republished, translated into every language in the world. And in that last will and testament, he tells his wife, whatever you do, don't let our daughters go to shul on Shabbat Yom Tov, because all that happens for women in shul is they see the other girls, they see the clothes they're wearing, they become jealous, they want new dresses, and they speak gossip. A shul is not a place for a woman. Nu, what do you see from this? You see that there's no chiyuv for women to daven b'tzibur. The Vilna Gaon, we don't have a greater litvak than the Vilna Gaon. Who me lana yotega domi agon mi Vilna? I grew up in an atmosphere when the Rav mentioned the Vilna Gaon at Kitzitit. He shook out of fear at Kitzitit. Ah, well, you'll learn, Josh, you'll learn a little Yiddish here. Erhot Kitzitit was shaking. The Vilna Gaon, and you see what he wrote. Rav Menashe Klein claims this at Tzavav de Nodu Biyehuda. Oh, Rabbi Yehuda, Landau, Rav Landau. What was his first name? No, his name was Yecheskel. His father's name was Yehuda. Nodav be Yehuda. Rabbi Yecheskel Landau, Tzlach. His mother's name was Chaya. Tziyun lenefesh Chaya. That's a reference to his mother. The Nodav be Yehuda, Rabbi Yecheskel Landau. He too. So you see very clearly that women are exempt from going to shul, from public prayer. My wife grew up in a home that had Hasidic tradition. Her mother came from Meshbetz Hasidim, her father came from Belza. And this is a family, you've got to remember, my wife's family reached America in the 1870s in Queens, in Mount Hebron Cemetery. My wife has great, I believe as much as a great-great-grandmother buried there, let alone great-grandparents, grandparents, the woman she's named for, her great-aunt, was Rebbetzin Malka. My wife is named after her also, Baruch Hashem, a Rebbetzin, although I don't know where the Rav is, but we'll give her the credit, she's a Rebbetzin. And I constantly asked her. Her grandmother never went to shul. I asked her, did your grandmother go at least? Neela, did your grandmother go? My wife said she doubts it. She doubts it. Kol Nidre. And her grandfather had a beard. He was a Baal Tokei. He was a Baal Tefillah. He davened in Rabbi Schmidman's shul in East New York. And Rabbi Schmidman's son, who taught at YU for so many years, one time imitated my wife's grandfather davening his nusach from my grandchildren. They should know who they descend from. So never went to shul. All right? Nevertheless, and it's very interesting here, women have accepted certain responsibilities. The greatest example is shofar. There is no question that shofar is a mitzvah taseh shezman grama. There's no question that women are exempt from shofar. Shofar is certainly is like tefillin. Tefillin is another prime example. Women are exempt. You can argue a certain mitzvah on borderline, so there's certain kinds of women are chayavot, there's a special limud like matzah, etc. But when it comes to shofar, and yet women want to hear shofar. It's like women were makabel on themselves this mitzvah of shofar. I need not tell you that we talk about Kriyat Megillah. No, Kriyat Megillah already, women have a chiyuv to hear Megillah. And you can see, the sources are all here, but it's easy to find them. Where they're from, it's brought down in Shulchan Aruch, Aruch Chaim at the end, that they used to read the Megillah for the betulat in the house. In other words, when the man came home or a few families got together, and the women, and they would hear the Kriyat Megillah in their house. So you see, he raises the question, if women are obligated and would be part of the public prayer, why read it in the house? Why not do it in shul? And yet you see the Magen Avraham, and this was Minhag Yisrael, you read for the women in the house. I remember when I was growing up and women had little children, they never went to shul. The man came home or a few families got together and you found someone who could read the Megillah, which, you know, with the Evidya Yotzei, without the Trup, you don't need Trup, you don't need it's not the Kriyat HaTorah, HaFtorah, where according to the Rav, certainly with Kriyat HaTorah, the Trup played a role. Here you got together, the women, there was never anything done publicly to help the women. Not to hear shofar. If a woman didn't hear shofar, so a man, if she had a husband who knew how to blow or had a friend who knew how to blow, he would come home, and certainly for the Ashkenazim, he could make a bracha. The Sfardim is more of a problem with the bracha. But for the Ashkenaziyot, I should say, you could make a bracha. So you see, he goes on again and again that there's no such concept as women going to pray. Hold on for 1 second. I just want to... So he gets very upset with what has happened in modern times. And what is he upset about? The innovation. What do I mean by the innovation? So all of you know that in every decent shul today, there will be a special Kriyat Megillah for the women. You even have in some shuls, now I have not seen this, but he writes that he did see it, you can tell me if you saw it, that there's a special shofar blowing for the women. Why do they do a special shofar blowing, a special Kriyat Megillah? We're talking about women with young children. So the husband, you remember, this is the story where Baron Lichtenstein told me, we were laughing so, but we were laughing with tears because we're part of a different generation. But a student came to Rabbaran, and by the way, I got a very similar question a year or two later. Student came to Rabbaran and said, Rebbe, my wife is very upset. We have two young children and she can never get to shul Shabbat. What does the Rosh Yeshiva think? And he quoted the Gemara in Brachot when the Nesiim, remember when they disposed Rabbi Gamliel, and then he came back. So they gave three Shabbatot to one Nasi, and one Shabbat to the new appointee. That was the compromise, three and one. He said, well, does the Rosh Yeshiva think of three Shabbatot, I go to shul and she takes care of the children? And Shabbos Mavarchim, which is special for women, because you all know what Tosfos says, that there's a kiyum of Kiddusha Tayom, because there's Musaf. So if there's Musaf, there has to be some Issa Malacha. Where's the Issa Malacha? That the women, some women have a minig not to do certain Malachat on Rosh Chodesh. So my wife will go Shabbos Mavarchim, and I'll take care of the children. And Rabbi Aaron told him, you'll have to ask a rabbi from your generation. I, from my generation, I can't handle a shaila like this. So you see, you developed special minyanim, Megillah. Anyone ever see a special minyan for a special prayer group for women for the blowing of shofar, with a man coming and blowing a shofar, 100 women? You've seen it.
That's so. Yes, but they would come at a later time.
At a later time. Okay, sir. Okay, so Reb Menashe,
he's. Be willing to go to people's
houses. To go to people's houses, I know, but he's talking that they set aside a time in shul where the women can come. So you've seen it, so Shoshu Rep Menashe Klein knows what he's talking about.
I see it not in shul, at the shul, but not inside the.
Right, not beside the. Beside
the portrait.
Wherever. So you see, he is very frightened. And he says, you'll start in with special prayer groups for women to hear shofar, to hear Megillah. Mind you, he's not dealing with what we have today, where there's special prayer groups for Megillah, where the women read the Megillah. The women of the wall already would have the women blow the shofar. You follow? Birchat Kohanat. I have to admit, I thought it was a joke. If you remember in class, I said to you when they first announced what they're going to do, I showed you a tshuva I got. I said, I read the trip, it's a joke, it's mamish a joke. This is like a kid of 5 years old wrote sources, and if it doesn't say it, I couldn't believe my eyes. I thought it was a joke. They went ahead and did it. They did Birchat Kohanot at the Kotel.
What is it called?
No, they did it, they did it. They did it.
And is it a kohen of somebody that marries a kohen, or a kohen of a woman that fathers a
kohen? No, I think it meant a woman whose father is a kohen, that she inherits the kohuna. But be it as it may, no, there's lumdis. It's not pashut. I once said lumdis a whole shia on why a woman can eat truma if her father wasn't a kohen. So she'd see, by marrying a kohen, there is a certain chaloit of kohuna rina. The Achronim talk about it. But Ribbono Shel Olam, ad kedei kach, but if a woman blows shofar for women, I don't know if they yotzei. She's not chayevet. The man is chayev at least. I don't know. It could be chalul yantef. I don't know. You got to think it out and look at the sources if there are any, because none of them ever dreamt of this. But he talks about a man blowing for women. But you see, what he is worried about is the domino theory, falling dominoes or the slippery slope. Call it what you wish. And this, my dear students, as people who love Torah, and I am a Torah Jew. I'm not an Orthodox Jew. I told you many times that's a terrible connotation. I am a very open-minded Torah Jew. I love every Jew, and I love every hashkafa, as long as you're a Shema Torah mitzvah. I live my life, but there are other hashkafa out there. Fine. You all know I've had very good relationships with Rav Ovadia Yosef, with Rav Shalom Meshash, and Rav Aaron Cutler, and Rav Moshe Feinstein, Mori Rav Seder. There are many, many hashkafa out there. Someone just attacked me. You know, it's amazing. They talk about the Rav. A kid in a Hesdi yeshiva attacked me on Shabbos. Why the Rav never came at Aliyah? You know, everyone has an opinion. And everyone is... And, you know, I knew the Rav intimately. I can explain why I don't agree. But all right, everyone has their place in life. Halavai, they would have elected him in 35. I wouldn't be sitting here. But the Rav would have changed the entire country. There's no question in my mind how he would have developed here. But the Jews in Tel Aviv were idiots. No, they're idiots. So you're stuck with Rav Kefet. Back here. Rafi. He's worried. He's worried. And this is the very problem we're living with. We cannot smack the women's face today. We spoke about it many times. The woman says to you, don't have to churn the milk. I don't have to milk the cow. I don't have to churn the butter. I don't have to bake the bread. The tzad gidl banim is much less. I gave you the example of the diapers that none of you understand under the age of 50. But those of us above 50 in the room remember very well the type of diapers we had to use and how you had to clean them. It's a different world today. What can we do? What can we encourage? And these are women who go into every profession you can imagine. Women who are skilled medical doctors. My own dermatologist is my dear Talmidah. You understand? I have other Talmidah, heart surgeons. women in the army today, in every unit in the army already. I'm not happy about it. But women, forget about Modiin, Kraviyot, frontline, and Frum, and Frum. So this is a real problem.
Okay. 60% in
dental school are women. Okay, and doctors, I understand in America you have more because you can't make a living out of medicine today, so there are more women than men, that's what I'm told. What did you want to ask before I go further, Shaya?
Just in these places where the women didn't go to shul, did they still
daven at home, do you know? Well, Meikin Hadin, the women just have to say one little prayer. And they yotzei. In other words, but you should know the Rav's daughters, until today, Tova and Atara, daven three times a day.
So, as I understand it, there is a chiyuv for women to daven
twice
a day.
That's open to question. It's open to question if there's a real chiyuv twice a day, or that's better. In other words, on the scale of she has to daven something, so it's better than just saying a small kapitel tehillim, etc. But there are all kinds of tchinot that women said. But in Europe, women did not daven three times a day. There's no question. They did not daven two times a day. Here today, in the modern world, I see it all over. And we had it in Michlava. I'll tell you a story out of Michlava. Absolutely. And Tova and Atara daven three times a day. And I can tell you in Michlava that the girls would be davening in the hallway, standing Shmone Esrei. And Professor Mordechai Breuer, Rabbi Mordechai Breuer, the one who was the great person in Tanakh, who was a character par excellence, taught Nalon Shvut. He was a character. This is Reb Mordechai Breuer. He once grabbed me in my son-in-law's office. He was a Yekki, went to my son-in-law, took over a Yekki dentist practice. This is the original, going back many, many years. And all the Yekkis went to him, and he once grabbed me there. You ruined your son-in-law. I turned him into a right-winger. He was a left-winger. Oh, my gosh, we could fight. He was hysterical when he saw girls davening. I can't tolerate it. I never saw this. Who saw women davening? Who saw women shuffling? So you see from the way he carried on, and he let his viewpoint be known. He carried on in Michlala. You see that in Germany, in Yekki land, the women did not daven twice a day. And he carried, and you're talking about Rav Shmuel Ful Hirsch's great grandson. You're not talking about the Plony Almoni. You follow? This is a Breuer. Oh boy. So it's a very, very delicate problem. And this is why I say time and again, we're dealing with it. We don't know what the outcome would be. We have to allow halacha to guide us. But you have to have emotion and understanding and sensitivity for the women who want to daven. Now, he raises another problem here, and this is a problem in all the shuls, whenever you have a big crowd. He quotes the Maharil. We're going back now to the end of the Rishonic period in Germany. You'll see the source, you can look it up. You have a Maharil downstairs, that the Maharil was already troubled that when women come to shul, because they want to hear shofar, this is in his time, they bring the children with them, and the children make noise and disrupt the davening. And Rav Menashe Klein, from his point of view, says, you see, he could have said very easily, have the women go make their own prayer group, let them have all the children they want. In that prayer group, they will not disturb the general population. They'll blow shofar there. Because the Maharil did not say that. It shows that from time immemorial, the Gedolei Yisrael were opposed to women making their own prayer groups. All right. The problem of children in shul is an old problem. You'll already find sources not to bring a kid to shul who's under 6 or 7. What can I tell you? I see the kids come to shul. My son-in-law inherited his father's position, the candy man. I see these 2, 3-year-old kids. You know Herbie, the shul. You know what I'm talking about. You give them a piece of candy. The kid says, Todah. the older kids will make a bracha. How can you not have children come to shul? It's so important to give them when I was rabbi in Maplewood, I knew I succeeded in a jungle, in a totally who was from who, what, a handful of kooks that were Shomer Mitzvah, fighting the tide, the conservative temple, the reformed temple. Oh, you don't know. You're looking at the man who built the first Orthodox shul in suburban Exus County. No one believes me today. You know, there's county filled with shuls. I can tell you my old shul, no one knows my name today. You want a proof, Alex? Very simple. When Washington appeared, I figured someone will get in touch with me. Maybe they want me to speak. It would be fabulous to go back, and it's now in a church. They took over the church, turned it into a shul. The shul is a dorm. There's a little yeshiva. There's an area of Chabadas there, where I was rabbi. And no one even called me. No one even knows my name today. But you go in. So my eldest daughter used to call the shul the cake house. And that was the biggest compliment, because she associated the shul with the Kiddush on Shabbos and the cake that we used to give out. So you see, these are delicate problems. How do you deal with it? Okay, now here, I want to tell you something. I'm going to reveal a big secret, and he deals with it here. And this is on page Kufsadi. It's worth looking up. His viewpoint, he knows himself what he's saying. Everyone is going to maledict him for it. But nevertheless, he says, I have to say what's on my mind. And here he accuses the Bate Yaakov of getting us involved in this problem, the frum schools. He's talking of frum schools. What does he mean? And he says, the reformers began in Germany, you know when reform began, 1819 in Germany, 1824, if my memory is correct, in America, Charleston, 1819, in Frankfurt, the first reform service, public service. All right. No one ever dreamt of separating the men and women, of mixing men and women. They still sat separate with the first reforms. Of course, many of the churches sat separate. No one ever dreamt of making special prayer groups for women. The shuls, the temples, were occupied 90% by men. Women didn't play a role. They had an organ. This was the start of reform. Mikdash Ma'at, Shuvas were written, you know, there were big Talmidei Chachamim who paved the way for the Reform movement. Shuvat were written, you had an organ, you had Clay Zemer in the Beit HaMikdash, right along, the Leviim Bishir, the whole sugya of what goes on with the Chalil, the Gemara and Sukkot. Whether you can do it on Shabbos or not. If he can shear a b'kli, you're allowed to do it Shabbos in the Beis HaMikdash. No, if you do it in Shabbos, why can't we do it in the Mikdash Ma'at? This is the way. L'Halil L'Shabeach. That whole capital in Tehillim, etc., etc. All right.
Say that
you can argue from today to tomorrow, but this is how they began. So he makes a very interesting point that, you see, what are we doing today? We're fighting a battle of assimilation. Everyone lives in dual culture. Even the most Haredi person in the world lives in dual culture. I mean, you need an example. What happened last week in Miami Beach, it's beyond words. If you know what's going on, two Hasidim are found drowned, naked or semi-naked in the water. It depends if you're a follower of Reb Zalman or a follower of Reb Aaron. If you know what I'm talking about, the split in Satmar. So these two Hasidim who were found dead, swept away by the tide, were followers of Reb Aaron. You should see what the followers of Reb Zalman are doing to them. And so, what are you doing at the beach? I mean, let's ask him, but you see, we live in a dual culture. How do you go near a beach in Miami Beach? You know, when I was told by people from Miami Beach who just came to Cali, I played a role in bringing them. We had supper together Friday night. They come to Miami Beach, men and women don't have to wear anything except a one-piece bathing suit, Vadaila Hakima. How do you go near the beach in Miami Beach?
North Miami Beach. It's like North Miami where it's very sparsely populated.
Where they were found... my friend, you just moved them 20 miles uptown from where they were found. Forget about North Miami Beach. I was just in North Miami Beach. Don't play games with me.
The sources they saw, they said North Miami Beach. No lifeguard there because you're in a place they want
to be next woman. So you don't know what's going on. The claims, the shmames back and forth. What are Hasidim doing in Miami Beach? How can you go to a place where women are topless two blocks from where you're davening? But the answer is very simple. We all live in two worlds as part of the culture. You have to get away from New York. Everyone who can goes down south, goes to Miami Beach. In my time, everyone used to go to Lakewood. Whoever dreamt of airplane travel, that's why Reb Aaron Cutler went to Lakewood. Because Hanukkah time, the place was filled with Jews from New York who were retired and had money. So Reb Aaron figured out that's when he'll make appeals for the yeshiva. How do you think Lakewood Yeshiva was supported at first? Then Miami Beach, what happens to Miami Beach in the winter? Wow, 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 you think you're in Williamsburg. You think you're in Bottle Park. My dear students, we all live in dual culture whether we like it or not. Now, you have girls, you're educating girls. Nowadays, girls basically are getting a very similar education that men receive. As a matter of fact, girls may be getting a better education in the Haredi world. Because men have to learn Gemara, they have very limited time for any outside studies. Girls learn English, girls learn a certain amount of literature, right? The books are censored, but you can keep the outside world up. So now you have girls, they go to shul on Shabbos, the shuls are filled. Even the shtiblach, when I was in Borough Park for 20 years, 4, 5, 6 weeks a year, I always davened in a shtibble around the corner. Shabbos, a big section for women. Shabbos afternoon, a class for women. I mean, you could, Malka Wendt, she suffered from the lectures, what went on there. Someone we knew from Bnei Akiva who didn't go in Aliyah. God has made us wealthy so we can perpetuate Judaism in Borough Park. Our homes are worth over $1 million so we can give our children a good chinuch in Borough Park. Wow, my poor wife, who's a bigger Zionist than I am, suffered. But who ever heard lectures for women? And today, many shtiblach have lectures for women. So you see, the girls are looking. They're getting a high school education. They're broadening, even in a Beis Yaakov, even in a Bet Rivka. Look at the curriculum that you have today, even in a Bet Chana, etc. So the girls are taught to pray. Yes, you want to teach the girls to stand Shmona Esrei twice a day. You want to give them a connection with the Ribbono Shel Olam. I've spoken to them, and I don't want to minimize this. I've spoken with my grandsons who have gone through Yeshivat Hezda, gone through the works here, and they asked me, what does it mean, davening? What is the greatness of davening? What kavana? And I would tell them what it means. You're doing what your grandfather did, what your great-grandfather did. When you put on tefillin, you're continuing a tradition from Maimer HaSinai. And that's why we're here. If we didn't put on tefillin, we would assimilate. When you're davening so that your great-grandchildren will daven. But I said it's more than that. When you go to a minyan, and there I quoted the Rav, I showed them what I wrote in the Rav, all right, Ichligendred, half I can't translate that. You know what that means, Ichligendred, on the floor. Got it? Ichligendred, half my kids don't read English. What can I tell you? They got some reading, some don't. I showed them the Rav, where the Rav speaks about Amcha Yisrael. When you're putting on tefillin, the Jew in Russia is putting on tefillin. The Jew in Yerushalayim, Bnei Brak, the Golden Heights, we're one people. It unites us. So you see, prayer is very important. Ah, so then the girls in Beis Yaakov start to say, well, why don't we all get together and daven as a group, like the boys daven? Now, I want to tell you, anyone involved in the chinuch of girls, this problem haunts us until today. In many schools, what they do is they have the girls, 1 o'clock, everyone comes together and they daven mincha together. All right? You're taking a risk. You're taking a chance. Why? Because 20 years from now, the girls will say, well, why can't we say Kedusha? Why can't we say Kaddish? And this is where we have to walk a very difficult line of dialectical tension. We have to broaden the education, enable them to daven, enable them to feel spirituality, enable them to feel they're talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that they have responsibility, that they're looking up. This is so critical. Enable to pray to God, ki v'shia malot mimamakim. You remember the Rav's word, that the heter for prayer is the fact that a human being always has problems. There's no one sitting here in this class that doesn't have one of two problems at this time. We who are older, we have health problems. Family, everyone, you can't say you're totally happy with total family, etc., etc. I don't want to give you examples, but all the Gedolei Yisrael I knew had plenty of problems because that's the nature of being in the public limelight. So you have to pray, you have to let out your heart. I have problems, I'll admit. I walk home from shul, I see Chilul Shabbos, it hurts me. I'm ashamed when I say Lama Shinim Al Titikva. I have to fight with myself not to have too much kavana, to be like Bruria, Eshet Rebbe Meir, V'dayla Chakima. Okay? You understand what I'm saying? So we all probably have that. Ah, so Rabbi Menashe Klein says this creates the problem, and he would be much happier if we didn't teach the girls to daven. He says, I know people are going to argue with me, but he would be much happier if we didn't teach the girls to daven. And here I want to reveal a little story, which again I never spoke about in public before, but I'm the only one who would know this story today. You all know that the Rav considered the greatest achievement of his life not the kids he taught in YU and not the Rabbanim he raised in YU. And he raised many fine Rabbanim, you can, many names. No, greatest achievement was Yitzhak Maimonides. Right or wrong, Yitzhak, I'm telling it as it is. Greatest achievement was Yitzhak Rubin, Maimonides. The Rav said, the Rav said time and again that he got Olam Haba because of Maimonides. I think it's in print as well. In his
I guarantee
book.
You he didn't mean me.
Yitzhak, he meant you among Baruch Hashem, many others. All right. Thank God, Maimonides. No, at one point in Maimonides, we spoke about this person a few weeks ago, months ago, and Yitzchak and I had an argument over the reality. Turned out I was right, unfortunately. Who did we speak about, Yitzchak? Rabbi Hananya Weinberg, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so Rabbi Hananya Weinberg was Rav, what was it, Malden, Massachusetts. And he had time in his hands, and he was a very active individual. He was president of the RCA in his 30s, in the early 60s. He was really an achiever. I was very fond of him. He came in Aliyah, he helped build the Plaza Hotel, he had an apartment there, and he became very active here for Yerushalayim, if you remember. Very active, that we shouldn't divide Yerushalayim. We've had a lot of problems here, and he was very active. Wonderful individual. His son-in-law was the editor of the Talmudical Encyclopedia and a great genius in medicine, author of many volumes, Dr. Avram Steinberg, etc. So Charlie became assistant principal of Maimonides, helping the Rav. They asked Charlie, people asked him, Charlie, how can you do this? You have a big kahil. He said, look, from the time I say goodbye after Shacharit to Mincha Maariv, I have a whole day. Let me do something constructive. So he assisted the Rav. So Charlie told me that the issue was raised. What do you do with the girls? The girls want to have their own prayer groups. And the Rav worked out with Charlie exactly what the Rav told Steve Riskin, Rabbi Riskin, if you have no choice, this is what you do. Exactly what Reb Moshe writes in the Tshuva about Riskin's synagogue. And the idea was the girls could come together and you have a shlucha leading them, and you can't say Kaddish, you can't say Kedusha, you don't read from the Torah, etc. But at least let them have the feeling of tefillah together. And Charlie raised the issue with the Rav, at least Charlie told me this, that, Rebbe, if we do this, we don't know what it's going to lead to, because this is the 70s, when already there was a strong feminist non-Jewish movement, which impacted upon the Jewish world. We have an expression in Yiddish, got me? The way it's Christian world, it hits the Jewish world. So Simon is also from Eidot HaMizrach, so you have company here, you're not the only one. So, and I've taught over the years many, some of my finest students, wow. In the Kollel and BMT, Baruch Hashem, women didn't have too many in the 70s, in the 80s already they start to come. So he said to the Rav, Rebbe, do you realize what the world is going to say? This is very dangerous. And they backed off. They raised the girls, daven, but not to do it formally with a feeling of a prayer group. It'd be interesting if you can find out what goes on in Maimonides today, okay? So many years later, do you have any contact there? But you see, that's exactly the problem that Rav Menashe Klein raised. But Rav Menashe Klein is very sharp. And because he's very sharp, he'll say, I mean, if you were to say this today, we can't agree. I don't agree. How can you raise daughters today, girls today, and tell them not to daven? Be like your great-grandmothers. Don't daven. What's pshat davening? I have daughters who daven twice a day. I could be all my daughters daven twice a day. I don't want to ask. I'd be embarrassed because I never raised them to do that. I was, all right, I saw, but I think it could be all of them daven twice a day. But this is a delicate issue. What we can do and the slippery slope. And the slippery slope is real, my dear students. When Chovevei Torah began, it began, right, they don't like the black hats, they don't like the beards, whatever, they don't like it, face the gartels. Fine, not everyone has Rakefet's breitkeit, broadness. You understand? You'll never find a negative word from me. You know my lectures on the Lubavitcher Rebbe, what's happened to me as a result of these past 2 years. I need the energy to meet up and keep up with all the invitations I'm getting. Fine. Very nice. I'm humbled. But, all right, they're against the swing to the right, the so-called, the book just came out. I'm reading it now. My student from this Kollel, Professor Adam Furziger, if you're familiar with it. The swing to the right. All right, they're opposed. But look what came out of Chovevei Torah. See that slippery slope? Who would ever dream that Chovevei Torah, homosexuals, biblical criticism, Shira Chadasha, partnership minyanim. Who would ever dream out of Talmidim of the Rav, Talmidim Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, people who were exposed to Goyim, Tzaddikim, Chassidei Elyon? Who would ever dream what would come out of it? They view Rakefet as a fanatic. The president, who's my student, came. He was upset that I'm upset, came to see me. I love him. He's a wonderful Talmud, 25 years ago. Wonderful Talmud. I asked him, who are your role models? He answered me, David Hartman and Irving Greenberg. Now, do I have to go further? It's frightening. So the slippery slope is real, and it is a consideration. Okay. Now I want to go one step further and come to something very fascinating. And here I will call your attention to what is behind the lines. And once again, I'm in a very unique position. There's probably no one else, because of what happened to me in life with my own student, who knows the inside story. I refer you now to page Kuf Tzadi Aleph of this tshuva. Now, the women's libbers, the feminist Jaffa, the Birchot Kohanot, they attack us on every level. One of the levels that they mention, why Does a woman have to wait 3 months before remarrying? Famous takana, Chazal, it's in Chazal. Again, it gives you all the sources, Yevamot, the Shulchan Aruch, Yevamot Membet, Amir Aleph, it's a whole sugya. Evan Ezra, Simon Yudimel, we'll part from it, I'll show it to you inside later. If not this week, next week. Why women? Everything is against the woman. A man may ikah hadin. Not halacha lemaisa, I'll explain, we'll get to this. But may ikah hadin, a man can get divorced on Monday and remarry on Tuesday. As a matter of fact, he can have, may ikah hadin, a man can have, David HaMelech was allowed up to 18 wives. All right, may ikah hadin, you can have more than one wife. All right, Chayrim, the Rabbeinu Geshem, and for the Svatic element, it's now the chief rabbinate, you know, of Israel, made the Chayrim for all Jews. No, all Jews living in Israel. We can't make Chayrim in America, it's bigamy, so it's Dinah d'malchut dinah on that level. But here in Israel, it's Mamish Meidin Halacha, chief rabbinate 1950, renewed the Chayrim on all Jews in Israel. Why does the woman have to wait 90 days?
I thought this was a non-issue, because you simply go to a test that you're not...
Yitzhak, it's a non-issue because we have the pregnancy test today. That's a b'di'evet. But l'chatchila, to make your adin.
Yeah, but b'di'evet is part of the halacha.
The women are complaining that in the Gemara, according to the halacha, they have to wait 90 days. Men do not, all right? So, Reb Menashe Klein, I understand what you're saying. Obviously, halacha l'maisa today, if they don't want to wait 90 days, we do a pregnancy test. But that's a b'di'evet, it's not l'chatchila. I have a couple where they converted, where she converted, and they waited 90 days, they separated. He's a Talmud of Reb Aaron Soloveitchik. She converted, it was a second marriage, a first marriage for her. Very fascinating story. She had been a nun for I think something like 13, 14 years, and she left her vows and came back to the world, and he was mad at God because his first wife inherited a big bundle, 4 children. The first thing she did, she divorced him, and she bought off the judge. It's a terrible story. He got a terrible settlement, took the children away. God have mercy. May he rest in peace. He suffered. So he went to a dating agency, and they asked him, is religion important? No. Is spirituality important? Yes. So they matched up that she said the same thing. Religion is not important, just what we were talking about. Spirituality, yes. So they matched her up with him, and lo and behold, they hit it off. I came to that area, I don't want to mention the area, and the rabbi said, Rebbe, we have a little task for you and your wife. Your student did picked me up in the 80s, became very close to me, and then this tragedy hit him. This is the story. Anyway, by the time we left that community, he came back to Yiddishkeit, B'lev V'Nefesh, and she, I set her up with a Talmud from Panovich, who was an Av Beit in there, in a certain area outside of Israel, and she was not hard to convert her, because she knew a great deal about Yiddishkeit, from her studies to become a nun. And Baruch Hashem, they converted and they separated. They were married already legally. They separated for 3 full months, kedat v'kedin. You know, I didn't allude to any kulat. They're willing to accept ol malchut shemayim. No, why do you separate? And here he says, of course, quoting the Gemara, we want to know who the child's father is. And you all know, someone gets pregnant, it doesn't show at first. Kanayin Hara, I have great-grandchildren, Baruch Hashem, another one on the way, and you know, they'll come and tell you, to me, my wife, expecting, but don't tell anyone, it's not public knowledge yet, we just told our parents and our grandparents. Fine. Within a month, 2 months, 3 months, believe me, it's public knowledge whether you like it or not. It's So that's why you have to wait 3 months. Now, why is it so important to know who the father is? And here you have, you know, the delicate issue that we suffer with today, something unbelievably, the self-inflicted aguna and all that goes with it. Not self-inflicted, the man-made by the husband. But at times, 90% of the time, 80% it's the man, at times it's the woman. I've lived through many, many of problems, and it hurts. They want to reform Judaism today, Chovevei Torah. If Torah is a divine system, there's little we can do. We have to work within the divine system. You have to be a lamdan. You have to know how to think. You have to know how to paskin. You have to read the Rav, where I talk about Rebbe speaking about what halacha is all about. I quote him word by word. So, why is it so important? She's getting divorced from this mamza. She hates him. She curses him. She's marrying a new man. He'll take over the kid. He promises everything. All right. Gentlemen, first of all, the father deserves a child. If you fathered the child, there's an obligation between that father and son. It goes two ways. But you can't say to a man, I threw you out of my life, and I'm taking away your children. There are 1,001 halachot around the father-child relationship. Kibud avim, one of the Ten Commandments. Financially, father's obligated to support a child. A child inherits a father. 101. A father has a right to play a role in the child's education. You can't just uproot the child. Not only that, and the most important factor of all, how many of you are Kohanim? How many of you are Levim in this class? How do you know you're a Kohen? How do you know you're a Levi? That's the famous Shaila I spoke about. That comes up time and again today. AID, artificial insemination donor. No, we have a Shaila. Reb Menachem Klein, among others, deals with it. A nice Hasidish Jew from the west side of New York, davening in the big shtibble there. There are a number of shtibbles, but there's one well-known old-time shtibble. No, he has wife, has a kid, mazel tov. No one knows that that kid is a result of AID. His sperm count is not powerful enough to produce a child. All right, those of you who have studied medicine know what I'm talking about. Guy can have a perfect sexual life, and yet he can't produce a child. It's not that he's impotent. Okay, the woman goes for AID. She wants a child. Rav Moshe is matir. Others are matir. It's a very difficult question. In my new book, I have many, many, many pages dealing with it. The Rav didn't know how to paskin, right? If you're familiar with the Rav, the world of, you'll see the Rav speaking about the Shaila, and he says, Oili mi yitzri, vi oili mi yotzri. Whatever way I turn, I'm in trouble. He doesn't know how to, he says, I don't know how to paskin. All right.
That's the DNA from his grandfather.
No, it's the DNA from his grandfather, but it's a very difficult child.
Probably better from a guy.
But that's Rip Moshe's answer in America. No. No one in the world knows. The father's a Kohen. Could you imagine you're davening in shul? The kid is next to the father. The father goes up to Duchen. The kid goes up to Duchen with the father. The kid is as much a Kohen as the President of the United States, Mr. Obama, is. Think for a second. This is, what do you do? And there's no solution. But you got to know who the father is. But worse than that, it actually happened in Israel. I give you the source in Rakafar Aaron Chelik Gimel. Worse than that. You're going out with a girl. And you're attracted to each other. Something, the pull, the personality. No, unknown to you. This is your half-sister.
Oy.
It happened in Be'er Sheva. It's unbelievable. You have that problem with AID. One in Israel, a young medical student wants to make some money. He donates sperms to the sperm bank. Out of one donation, they can father, I'm told, up to 18, 20 children out of one donation. No. Brother and sister. Your mother remarried, you don't know, she didn't tell you you're from the first husband. She hates her ex-husband. You know what happens in divorce. I've seen it way, way, way more than once. You got to have muscle when a couple breaks up that they should break up in Menschlichkeit. You know, there's a Medrash Rabbah, I quoted it when I spoke about marriage, how the wife says he's divorcing her because she can't have children. And he goes to the Rav, and the Rav says, look, you made a big party when you got married. It's a Medrash Rabbah. You made a big party when you got married, make a big party when you get divorced. So he makes a big party, got divorced, and there's liquor, and he gets drunk, and he says to his wife, I want to give you a gift. You were such a good wife for 10 years. And she says, there's only one gift I want, the most precious man I ever met, you. And they go back to the rabbi and they remarry, and it happens to them. And they have children. It's a powerful medrash. No, people get divorced today with such hatred. And he doesn't know who his father is. No, you're from the second man. 20 years later, did I make a mistake in quoting it? What did I invert something? No, tell me, it's okay.
It's right.
I quote it right, Baruch.
It's slightly different, but it's...
What do you mean slightly different? Tell me.
He told her to get from his house anything.
Take from his house, right. He said to her, correct. He told her to take from his house your most precious possession, and she took him, and he was drunk, he was in a stupor. Right, then. All right. I want to thank Yom Yom. I want to tell you something. The Rav, I pride myself that I can make a mistake in quoting a Medrash, because I know two Medrashim the Rav quoted, where he also inverted a little. So, you know, a Medrash is not the Baruch Hashem halacha that you learn day and night and work on all your life. A Medrash you see one time, and it leaves an impression, so I'm very happy to accept the correction from Yomo. Kala kabod. Yomo, I want to see you live the Medrash, halacha lamaisa, the end of the Medrash, not the first part. Simon, we'll let Yomo deal with it. Now, so you see, you're going to go out years later, and you meet a girl, gee, she's just like me, she thinks like me, the same disposition. She's from that same father. You never knew who the father was. It's your half-sister. You understand what's involved here? These problems are overwhelming. Overwhelming.
How did they discover that she's a half-sister?
In Be'er Sheva, it turned out, if I recall correctly, they had access to the sperm bank information at that time. I don't think today you can do it. It was when it was very primitive. And they kind of found out it was his half-sister. It's a terrible, frightening fear. This is
so
why
are you doing did, like that?
You have to hope they're not married. If the kid is a mom, so you'll have to read Rakafar Aaron Chayla Gimel and suffer through the whole one-third of over 100 pages is devoted to the question you asked. Mam Zeret, what do you do? Halach l'maisa. It's all in there. It's very frightening. What they do today, they go to Munich, they go to Germany. If I'm not mistaken, it's Munich. I've had students who went. One girl, when I met her with the baby, I gave her a mazel tov. She cried. She said, Rebbe, you're the first person not to curse me. I said, look, had you asked me before, I might have told you a different psak. But once you did it, I'm not going to maledict you. We'll be samach on Reb Meisham. So she went, they go to Germany. In Munich, there's a hospital. I'm told it's a square block, a tremendous hospital. People come there from all over Europe. And their rate of success is something like approaching 90%. You follow? It's geared only to AID. And they're, because they have to know when the woman is ovulating. It's not so simple. And they have to know that the takes, I mean, today what they can do, it's beyond words with the fertilization outside the woman's body. And where you get the eggs from, and that is a shaila where you have three different women contributing. And then when you have a surrogate mother, who's the mother, you know how much has been written on this in modern times. But here, Rabbi Menashe Klein, what about Tumat Kohanim? Who's your real father? Your second husband is a Kohen. The kid thinks that's his father. And he's a Kohen. The first father was a Kohen. The second father is a Kohen. He doesn't know who his father is. He's metame to the wrong father. He wasn't allowed to go to the funeral. He's a Kohen. He thinks it's his natural father. You follow? The problems here that he lists out are real and frightening. And this is why you have to wait 3 months. And here, he says something that is shocking. I showed it to Malka on last week, and she couldn't believe it. She said, yeah, we know the story. What does he say? What I was describing here, umachmat sinat bala tachish ibura mimenu. Because she hated her first husband, Natan, she withheld from the children that this is her real father. And she let the child think it's her second husband. V'nimtza sha'ata gozel min hablad et aviv ha'ima amiti. You rob from the child his real father. No? What's he talking about? Do you remember the life story of Reb Menashe Klein?
His first wife.
He went through this exactly. Remember the story? Let me repeat it. Came out of the Holocaust, married a woman with a lot of yichus. On paper, it seemed to be a good shidduch. I believe she too was a survivor. Believe she was from Canada, and they have a boy. There's a Brit. He never saw the child again. She disappeared with the child. She used him to father the child. Had the baby, disappeared. Shalom al Yisrael. Never saw the child again. No, we have young fathers in this classroom. Moshe, how would you ever feel if you had a child, saw the child for 8 days, and never saw your child again? It's unbelievable. He remarried, divorced her evidently, remarried, had a whole second family, Kedat v'Kedin. Evidently his second wife was totally devoted to him. And then, my dear student, who was more than a student to me, I told you, when I came to Maplewood, who can you be friendly with? Where's there a from Jew in sight? Herbie Maltz, all right, he was in Elizabeth. So the principal of the day school, Rabbi Joshua Chetovitz, if you remember the name Herbie.
He was so, in Iran.
So afterwards, that's after his wife divorced him. Anyway, we became very friendly, the two families. As a matter of fact, we spent our last Sunday in Maplewood at their home. It was a farewell barbecue. And this girl grew up with my daughters, and she studied with me in Michlala, wonderful girl, and things made a shidduch for her with this wonderful man from Toronto, medical doctor, specialist. She got pregnant and had a boy, had a Brit. She never saw her son again. He did to her what Reb Menashe Klein's first wife did to him.
That was his son?
Yeah, exactly, absolutely.
That was Reb Menashe
Klein, if you, and we went to Reb Menashe Klein and he cried. He said, I can't do anything. What you're going through is exactly what I went through. And this girl, you don't, I don't, it's frightening. I mean, it's a novel. If I would write novels, I could buy and sell the whole Bruce campus instead of, you write Torah and you get 200 shekel for the year, royalties, 223, I think it is. Baruch Hashem. You can't imagine. And I want you to know that Sidkut of my wife, this girl, he was a doctor, well-placed. He declared her insane, had friends of his sign on. She never saw the child. In Canada, I think the law is if you don't see a child of yours for 3 years, you lose custody. After she lost custody, he gave her a get. She came back to New York totally broken. Ugh. And so whenever we were in New York, we went to visit her, to encourage her. Her aunt and uncle took her in like a daughter. They're no longer alive. Fabulous people. Mechanchim from Far Rockaway. And whenever we were in New York, we went to visit her, B'lev v'nefesh. And then there was a fellow in Israel from big Hasidic Yichus. Big Yichus. Eish Kodesh, etc. And he couldn't find his way in life. He was a product of the Mamlachti Dati school system. Family were a big Zionist brother, a big late brother, no longer alive, someone I knew well, a big leader in the Mizrahi. And they needed a shidduch for him. So Zem Geret the shidduch, they spoke a shidduch with this girl. And as they say, the rest is history. He's a well-known Rebbe today. She's a Rebbetzin, wonderful children. Life has to move on. You need the strength to move forward. This line is a mirror to Reb Menashe Klein's life. And he's saying to the women, the 90-day waiting period is for you. For your child, for your good, for your health. The first husband has obligations. He just can't walk away. This is his child, and you have no right to take the child away from his father. And this is why they require you to wait. And the feminists have no right to be critical. V'zeh tovat havelad. This is for the good of the child. Kumuvan l'chol bar dat. That any person who just has common sense will not be critical of Torah Hashem. It's for your good and the baby's good. And then he brings the proof. And this is exactly the proof, not only from Halacha, but from the Medrash that the Rebbe attempted to quote and quoted partially correct, and Yomo supplemented the Rebbe to fill it out. Nu, hamachzir et gerushato. You don't have to wait a second. You divorced your wife at 9 o'clock in the morning. You're upset. What did I do? Am I crazy? And you went running back to her with a beautiful diamond. Sweetheart, please don't leave me. But you just gave me a get. Can remarry her 1 minute later. And I want to tell you, Rabbi Peretz Steinberg, you recognize the name? Rabbi in Kew Gardens Hills, or is it beyond Kew Gardens Hills?
Kew Gardens Hills.
What's it called? In Israel? Queens Valley. So Rabbi Peretz Steinberg, if you remarry the woman that he arranged the divorce, he's Masada Gittin, there's no charge for the remarriage. And I actually have a student. His first wife died. I knew her well. Ugh, what the ground swallows. You know the rabbinic expression. Vayla ha-shufra, the vala. What a shame that such a beautiful human being rots away in the ground. It's a beautiful expression. Decays in the ground. And his first wife died young. And he remarried. She was divorced. He was divorced. And it was a struggle where to live and their lifestyles and to come and be one. And they got divorced. And Baruch Hashem, a few months later, as I recall, they remarried. And Rabbi Peretz Steinberg did not charge them. And as far as I know, and I know quite well, they're happily married until this minute. So this is a powerful piece in the Mishnah Halachot. We have one more section to go, where he deals with the meiniket, why a woman can't remarry if she's nursing a child, and he's refuting criticism by the feminists. Very powerful. As Rabbi Rubin says, at times we can solve this problem today with there are various ways. Obviously, if she is not nursing and she's not breastfeeding, so the problem doesn't exist. It could be if the second man takes on responsibilities, bifnei beit din, that he'll support. But the halakha itself is very fascinating, and he too here makes a case for the beauty of the halakha, and it should not be criticized or put down. The minute we finish the tshuva next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, I'm going to show you what Mori Rebbe of Soloveitchik has to say on this very same question. Fascinating. You'll see certain words correspond with Reb Menashe Klein, mila b'mila, word by word. I just want to tell you, this is the Shulchan Aruch. Next we'll do next week, this is the Rav. I'll tell you exactly why I got the Rav, give you a case study afterwards, and what we're heading into afterwards is not meyinin le'inin b'yoto inyan, but something parallel. Reb Shlomo Lokalbach, and can you listen to his nigunim and sing his songs today? So to reiterate, what did we do today? We made a lot more progress in the tshuva of Reb Menashe Klein. The whole question of davening, it's a work in process. I don't have a black and white answer, and I don't think anyone in the world today can give a black and white answer. But ultimately I say, Fukhazi mai amad davar. The Gemara in Brachot, Daf Bim Dalet Amid Bet, Daf Mem Hei Amid Aleph. Go out and see what the people are doing. It means the people who care about Torah. Or as Hillel HaZaken said, the Gemara in Pesachim, I believe it's Daf Samach Vav, Im Lo Neviyim Chem, B'nei Neviyim Chem. So it's something we are going to work out. Tomorrow, Shia Be'ezrat Hashem, I pick up exactly where I left off. I thank all the people who complimented me on last Monday's lecture. I considered it, to me it's axiomatic. But all right, I humbly say thank you. And I go one step further to prove I was right last week. And we're coming into a major, we're going to show you a sociological, so study again. You'll hear the Hasidim talking before the Rebbe died. And then we have to deal with the question, can there be a Messiah who rises from the dead? Sound familiar?
Sounds ridiculous.
Relax. I will handle Yitzchak in dignity. Okay,
Rabbi
now.
Rabbi Shechatovitz still alive?
Who alive? No, Rabbi Shechatovitz remarried here in Israel. I was Masada Kedushin. He was lucky after his divorce. He found a job, became an Aliyah, found a job with the Jewish agency. Married a woman, it was in all the newspapers, tremendous stories. Her husband was an admiral in the American Navy. They were friends with the Kennedys, Hyannisport. They were old time, they descended from the Mayflower people, that era. And Chabad picked her up. And all her children, they looked 100% Goyish, blonde hair, blue eyes, Menachem Mendel, Chaya Mushka. It was unbelievable, their names. And they all, as far as I know, they all live here. And he had a very beautiful, he was a rabbi, married her, gave her class. She's a full Jew. And she gave him a beautiful marriage. But never, he died, I don't know how many years ago, but it's not recent, it's not yesterday. Yeah, so you know the family, Kanein Hara. All right, gentlemen, I wish everyone in the Kollel would read this. It'll give you an idea of what we're up against. I don't know where this is from. It's on a woman who gets a get in the RCA basin, does her husband a favor to take a get. And she's a daughter of a clay kodesh, must be a Shemesh Shabbos, because he's a cousin in the Reform synagogue, and the Rabbanim tell him off. The Rabbanim from the Beit Din seem to know, maybe a YU graduate. One second, I don't want to get confused here with all the... This is the article, okay? And she writes... The hatred that this woman expresses, read it, you'll see what we're up against. How do we handle cases like this? If it can be handled, I don't know. What else do I have here? Oh, here's about Kiryat Yovel, what broke Kiryat Yoel, the Satmar Rebbe's village, the scandal that broke there that made the New York Times. And here we come back to a problem that we're going to get involved with maybe next year, 2 years, 3 years. Ribbono Shel Olam, give me strength. Can you call in the secular authorities? To me, thank God in Israel, more or less, the minute there's a problem, they call in the secular authorities. Not in America. This scandal is now in the New York Times.
This is only in the Haredi world.
We're talking the Haredi world, of course.
Because they were...
Here's from our world. This is about the Rabbi Lau in New York. Amichai Lau Lavi. You can hit your heads against the wall.
Benny Lau's brother.
Benny Lau's brother just got ordination from JTS. He is a homo, married to a homo, married, living with a homo, plays music on Shabbos, what can come out of one family. This is very frightening to me. Kingsborough Jewish College, how they're anti-Semitic today. Kingsborough Jewish College was established and created by Professor Jacob Hartstein, Talmud Mufak of Rabbi Revel, and former, what we call today, the Dean of Yeshiva College, and today, anti-Semitism. Ernest Michel, a New York Times obituary, a survivor who went on to do unbelievable charity work for the Jewish people and the State of Israel. This is the Jewish week take on the scandal in Kiryat Yoel. I keep on saying Kiryat Yoel. They had movies of the principal playing games with children on his lap. And they had the movies, and they didn't respond, you know, from security cameras. My dear students, until we meet again tomorrow morning at 9:05 a.m., I hope you have paid your additional 10% taxes to the Israeli government for the entertainment we have here. No one can believe what has happened. And as I said it 2 hours ago, when Mr. Daniel of TV fame wants to leave the country because the fascists are taking over, Rakefet will accompany him to the airport and carry his suitcases for him.
Kingsborough Community College.
Yeah, yes, we're talking about.
It's a Jewish college.
Kingsborough Community College. Till we meet again in health and happiness. Das Vedanya.